Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table,
a new United Methodist community of faith taking shape at Central UMC in Sacramento, California.
The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Duhirsu,
with a musical introduction by Anthony Coleman, our director of music.
Thanks for listening.
Gospel of Matthew. I'm reading from chapter 2, verses 1 through 12. In the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, wise ones from the east came to Jerusalem asking, "Where is the child who has been born King of the Jews? For we observed his star at its rising and have come to pay him homage." When King Herod heard this, he was frightened, and all Jerusalem with him. And calling together all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. They told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it has been written by the prophet. And you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For from you shall come a ruler who is to shepherd my people Israel." And then Herod secretly called for those wise ones and learned from them the exact time when the star had appeared. Then he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, "Go and search diligently for the child. And when you have found him, bring me word so that I may also go and pay him homage." When they had heard the king, they set out, and they were ahead of them went the star that they had seen at its rising until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw that the star had stopped, they were overwhelmed with joy. On entering the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they knelt down and paid him homage. And then, opening their treasure chests, they offered him gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they left for their own country by another road.
Yes, they went home by another way, home by another way. Maybe me and you can be wise guys too and go home by another way. We can make it another way. Safe home, as they used to say. Keep a weather right to the char on high and go home by another way.
There are lots of different stories around this Sunday. We're singing them, and Matt's reading them, and I'm going to start with yet another. The stories we've been hearing come out of the Hebrew scripture tradition and our New Testament, but this story comes from a collection of the Saints of Islam, and it's about a king of a region called Balkh. We now know it as northern Afghanistan. His name was Ibrahim bin Adam, and Ibrahim was very wealthy, according to every earthly measure of wealth. At the same time, though, he sincerely and restlessly strove to be wealthy spiritually, too. So he went to bed one night, and he was in a deep, deep sleep, and suddenly he heard a sound, and he was roused. It was a fearful, loud stamping on the roof above his bed. And very alarmed, the story says, he shouted, "Who is there?" "A friend," came the reply from the roof above. "I've lost my camel." Perturbed by such stupidity, and he was a king, you know, he said, "You fool, are you looking for a camel on the roof?" "You fool," answered the voice from above, "are you looking for God in silk clothing and a comfortable bed?" The story continues, according to the theologian who shared it with me, to tell how those simple words shared in the life of that king filled him with such fear and terror that he completely got up out of bed at that moment, arose, and became a remarkable saint. And that's the tradition of the country he is from. I would say that the king had an aha moment. It was a moment that changed him, and a moment in which he grew in faith, a moment that shifted his way of thinking and his way of being. I'm sure we would prefer God not do those in the middle of our sleep, but hey, it happens. There's a word for an experience like that in the English language. It's epiphany. Epiphany. When was the last time you had one? And when you did, how did you share it? Whom did you share it with? What happened next? There are two ways to tell the story of the morning of the three kings. There's the G-rated version, which our children are hearing. Fear not, parents. And it's G-rated because they're just learning about kings and gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And it's really the story that they're learning is a compilation story of all the Gospels put together, which is also the story that we sang. But there's also an R-rated version, which leans towards what LeJean sang for us, the James Taylor version, the version Matt read. The R-rated version has an edge to it. The R-rated version gives a little more hint into what was really going on. A preacher I admire, Anna Carter Florence, says it better than I can. I've tried all week, and I'm just going to use her words about this very passage. She says, "Our travelers from the east, they were wise men. Maybe they were even rich men. Maybe they were kings, if the legends are true, but that's not how really the text is telling us." This sounds really, it's all right? Okay. The way the text begins is, in the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem asking, "Where is the child who has been born king of the Jews? For we have observed his star at its rising and have come to pay him homage." Let's cut to the point, the R-rated point. Being wise is not the same as being smart. To search for the Christ is the epitome of wisdom. To underestimate the king of the day, King Herod, is the epitome of stupidity. The first people to hear this story, most likely those hearers of Matthew's gospel as he told it, must have fallen out of their chairs. I mean, we're sitting calmly, but seriously, they would have heard this, fallen out of their chairs, laughing at that very first sentence. The wise men did what? They waltzed straight to Jerusalem and did what? With Herod on the throne? What idiots. What absolute idiots. The first people to hear this story would have caught the supreme irony that pretty much misses us. The irony that's at work in the telling, because they would have remembered what it was like, what it was really like when King Herod was actually on the throne. Herod was one of the cruelest dictators ever to pass through the Middle East. A man so paranoid about succession that he had his own sons executed to keep them from inheriting the throne. One theologian, just as a side, said, you'd wish you were a pig in a poke that belonged to Herod before you wished he was your daddy. You were safer as a pig. You couldn't pick a worse time for the Messiah to be born than in the days of King Herod. See, we don't hear it like that, right? You couldn't pick a worse strategy for the wise people than to cross a border into Israel, head straight to the capital, openly ask for the address of some baby that had been born king of the Jews, adding, of course, that this baby's birth announcement was actually written in the stars for everyone in all of Persia to see. When King Herod heard, the text says he was frightened. King Herod, angry dictator, frightened. And all of Jerusalem frightened with him. The first people to hear the story would have caught that grand sarcasm at work in the phrase, and all of Jerusalem with him. Because they would have remembered what happened whenever Herod got upset. You've heard, maybe sad to say, some of that phrase, wait till your father gets home. That is scary. It strikes fear in the heart of some. Because when Herod was scared, Israel paid in blood. And the king's fear translated into disaster for his subjects. The man killed his own sons, like I said, when he got scared. So if he would kill his own sons, whose sons wouldn't he kill? What child in Israel could possibly be safe if a king took it into his head to set his death squads on a search for babies? So being wise is not the same as being smart. And by all means, set out on pilgrimage. Pay homage when you get there. Offer your rich gifts with symbolic meaning, gold, frankincense, myrrh, whatever, but for heaven's sake, be smart about this. And so they were, because right at the end, it says, they went home by another way. They went home differently than how they set out. Those first hearers, they had a past. They were people who came from a lineage that had been brought out of deep bondage in Babylon. God brought them out. The prophet Isaiah wrote about it, and the writer of this passage in Matthew had that in his conscious memory. He remembered those words that the people knew then, and he looked back and he said, ah, aha, epiphany. I know what happened at Christmas. The light came. The star settled. God came. God was present with us. Aha! And he remembered the words he had been raised with from the prophet Isaiah. Arise, people of Babylon, for your light has come. So Matthew, knowing those stories, remembering those words, probably also remembered these words, and I'm just going to read a little bit from Isaiah and see if you hear some of that that's been deposited in Matthew's writing. The people of Babylon were told, "The abundance of the sea will be brought to you when you are out of captivity. The wealth of the nations will come to you. A multitude of camels shall cover you. All those from Sheba shall come, and they will bring gold, and they will bring frankincense, and they will proclaim the praise of the Lord." Gold and frankincense. It doesn't say myrrh. Matthew added that. Myrrh is what you use to prepare bodies for death. And so to have that added in, right, means Matthew's saying, but we know what happens to this baby. We know. Because he wrote this after Jesus' life. So it's a tinge of the old, all the way back to Babylon. And it's a lot of the conscious memory of the story of the one they were trying to follow named Jesus. And then he adds myrrh. Because he wants to remind us that that sweet, precious gift from God ends up dying a torturous death. I told you it was the R-rated version. It's hard to put all that together. Matthew does a really good job. And so what it is for us, hopefully today, is to remember on some level that it happened in Babylon and those people got out. God is at it again in Bethlehem. So it happened in Babylon and it happened in Bethlehem. That means the door is open for us too. And we know there are current day Herods all around us. Illogical, ranting, raving, angry tyrants who tyrannize and operate the world out of fear. But God comes in and opens doors, and there are epiphany moments. So if it can happen throughout history, surely it can happen for us. Easy for me to say. Do you believe it? I'm just going to let that settle. Do you believe that? Because the challenge is for us today, 2013, is that we live in a time, I think, when we can pretty much explain anything away. Just even like I said, a tyrant, a ruler, a this or a that. We can explain everything. I've had therapy, I know. I was raised a certain way, therefore I'm going to behave a certain way. I'm from Berkeley. Matt will tell you about my feminist bend. Nothing I can do about it, she said proudly. We can explain everything, or can we really? You know, because if we can, then we're really stuck. And that's wherein comes the rub. Because really, if we get stuck, then we're captives back in Babylon. And we can't find freedom. And it kind of goes something like this, I think. Well, it's not so bad here, really. If you just lay low, Herod doesn't bother you. He feeds us. We have a place to live. We've got shelter. The schools, not so good, but I'm not going to make waves, right? That's what it can feel like when we stay in captivity. And someone comes and offers an open door like God, and we say, no, that's okay, I'm fine. I know what to expect where I live. I get through my days, it's okay. Those were just dreams I had at one time. Those were just dreams. There's one of my favorite Calvin and Hobbes cartoons. I don't get to tell it very often. You'll see why it's a New Year's thing. The stuffed tiger asks Calvin,
Did you make any resolutions for New Year's? Calvin becomes upset and indignant, as Calvin is wont to do, and starts shouting immediately, "No! I'm just fine the way I am. Why should I change? In fact, I think it's high time the whole world started to change to suit me. I don't see why I should do all the changing around here. If the new year requires resolutions, I say it's up to everybody else, not me. I don't need to improve. Everyone else does." Tie right over. Calvin turns calmly to Hobbes and asks, "How about you, Hobbes? Did you make any resolutions?" Hobbes says, "Well, I had resolved to be less offended by human nature, but I think I blew it already." It's our nature. It's my nature. To think that we're fine the way we are on some deep, deep level, really. To think that we have arrived and we don't have any need to learn and change and grow, and some of us get stuck for various reasons, really good ones sometimes. Some of us get stuck, we can't figure out what the next faith step ought to be. And if that describes you, look out. Because you walked in here today. And this place has been known for some aha moments. And our faith carries with it a tradition, as you are learning, of an aha faith. You see, the Christian faith stands over and against stagnation, bondage, ever having arrived anywhere, really, and knowing it all. That's just not what being a Christian follower of Jesus is about. And in this place, we do our utmost to push, pull, prod, love, carry, drag each other to grow in our faith. We really do. Matt and I have shared over this whole season, beginning in Advent, some of the writings of the great Howard Thurman with you. And if you don't know, Howard Thurman was a professor at Howard University and then the dean of the chapel at Boston University. He founded a beautiful interfaith, intercultural church in San Francisco and wrote many books of theology and poetry and prose. He was a deeply learned man by anyone's standards, and even I would say that man has arrived, if I would ever. Like, he would be at my small dinner table, you know, next to Bill and Hillary, right there. Every year, Howard had this tradition. He would write down the previous year's understanding that had come to him about God's nature. And then, after he wrote it down, not before, he would open the what he had written the year before and compare them. If they were not different, he said, he was deeply disappointed. He felt that maybe the last year even had been a waste in the way he had lived and followed God. Howard Thurman, one of the greatest theologians of our time, didn't think he knew everything he ever needed to know about God, and that there was always more to learn. So the same for us, I hope. That we too long to learn in some fashion, and that we will have aha moments. For that is the meaning of this day in the church, is to lift that up. The joy and the challenge of aha. And I know it's no small task to expect that in our lives. It takes discipline to change and to shift and to grow. It takes practice to begin new ways of being, to say what is real now that you have met God or pursued God, just saying what you know just now, not after it's all perfect and formed out there. To say what we know now as an aha might be just as simple as saying, I know what is real for me today as a person who wants to grow in faith. It's not the way I am now, it's the way I want to be. I don't know how I'm going to get there, but I know that with God's help I can. As simple as that. One last story from another great preacher named Mark Trotter. And he tells the story of a student, you can imagine this, walking across campus. And it's early on a Sunday morning, and the student sees a man coming towards him, and as they, you know, get closer and closer, the student realizes he's seeing the president of the university. This story always reminds me of that TV show, Undercover Bosses, you know. But he recognizes him. And he says to the president, what are you doing up and out so early on a Sunday morning? Because he was in a suit. He wasn't in running clothes. And the president said, I'm going to church, just walking across campus. And the student said, well, what made you decide to do that today? It's not exactly warm. And the president said, I didn't decide to go to church today. I decided that years ago. Years ago. When we make decisions to be in a certain way, to live out certain practices, part of what can help us by making that decision is just every morning not having to remake it in that way, but to simply say, I'm doing my practice. I'm doing my practice. And out of that practice come our aha moments that bring together our hopes and our aspirations, our deepest longings, our dreams, our visions of how we might be. All of our responsibilities and our obligations come together because the gospel message of new life that is being offered to us happens just that simply. But it's also just that hard. I lied. I have one more story that's not written down, but I have to say it like this. I already told Matt this one. It's CrossFit story. I can't help it. But my son is in CrossFit now, and his friends came home from college. CrossFit is a gym. It's a way of life. It's a religion for some people. And my son has been enrolled. And so his friends came home from college, and they've been separate, you know, since the summer. And we were together, and Matt and Harrison were practicing their upside-down handstand thingies. And one of the friends said to my 19-year-old, you need to do more like Matt and build up that upper body. And Harrison says, he's not here, so I can tell this, he says, no, he's not doing upper body. That's not CrossFit. You do all your body, all the time, every time, in different ways. And it takes a long time. Matt's been at this a lot longer than me. And he was calm. And he was rooted. And I cried. I did. It was beautiful. It was beautiful because it's the practice. That, he doesn't know it, but that was an aha moment for my 19-year-old. We have those two. And as we come to this place and move to this table, it might happen right here today, an epiphany for all of us.
It's all right if you put your hands together and enjoy the music of praise. Look at your neighbor and say, good morning, good looking. And help me say, go tell it on the mountain. Go tell it on the mountain, over the hills and everywhere. Go tell it on the mountain that Jesus Christ is born. While shepherds kept their watching over silent flocks by night, Behold, throughout the heavens, there shone a holy light. Come on, everybody say, go tell it on the mountain, over the hills. Say, go tell it on the mountain. Tell them that Jesus Christ is born. The shepherds feared and trembled when low above the earth rang out the angel chorus that hailed the Savior's birth. Come on, hear me, hear you say, go tell it on the mountain, over the hills, and everywhere. Go tell it on the mountain that Jesus Christ. One more verse. Down in the lonely manger, the humble Christ was born. And God sent us salvation, that blessed. Now let me hear you say it like you're happy about that and say, go tell it on the mountain, over the hills, and everywhere. Go tell it on the mountain that Jesus Christ is born. Say it again. That Jesus Christ is born. That Jesus Christ is born.